characterized jazz and jazz-inspired serious music by a rich assortment of derogatory adjectives.
Maybe I'm in love with you. I say maybe. Maybe I'm in love with you. You put your arms around me. I'm in love with you. You say that you believe me, that our love is true. I say maybe.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'm so very happy to have Ilya Kaminsky back here in the studio here in wonderful ye old Ann Arbor. And it was so great. Hey, Jason, thanks for picking the songs for today's show, leading off with Home George and the old Living Writers classic that George has let us use for the show, maybe. Ilya Kaminsky is in town as the Zell Distinguished Poet in Residence. Ilya, thank you so much for taking the time to come here today down to the studio. And we've got your book, Deaf Republic, with Grey Wolf Press. Shout out to Grey Wolf. And you're in town to do a reading tomorrow with a question and answer time on Thursday at the Art Museum, 5:30. Also available online for folks to come in person and online. And then again, a craft talk. Folks can see you at 10 a.m. on Friday at the Robert Hayden Room in Angel Hall, upstairs on the third floor. And your craft lecture is, I love it, Your Own Singing School, How to Create Your Own Tradition.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here today, for welcoming me back so warmly. And it's always a real pleasure to be in conversation. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for being here, Ilya. Excuse me. Sorry, everyone. I'm 4 weeks out from the flu, but I think these are allergies now. Excuse me, Ilya.
No worries.
So, yes, you were here 5 years ago. That's like Ilya kindly did the math as we walked over here.
It was a pre-pandemic country.
It was. And now it's so much has changed.
Now it's a depression country.
It's right. But yet things are hard. But I have to say there is it's wonderful. It's good to see you again.
It's wonderful to see you as well.
And the things that I feel like since we've last spoken, Ilya, my sense of your life in particular, I've often thought of you because of the war happening in Ukraine with the Russian aggression. And I should just say, first of all, that all the opinions here on Living Writers are my own or my guests that are lovely enough to come and be in conversation on Living Writers. They don't reflect the University of Michigan, certainly not the Board of Regents. The opinions are my own and my guests.
But let's hope that one day University of Michigan and the Board of Regents will grow up to be equal to your opinions.
It's very, very kind, Ilya. Kind indeed. And so you're no stranger from having strong opinions out in the world. You are a public poet, a public artist.
There's no such thing as a public artist. They're just loud people.
Well, thank goodness for that. And thanks for also being able to sustain it. Because that takes a certain kind of living and a certain kind of energy. So thank you for being here in the world, Ilya.
Thank you.
So tomorrow you're also meeting with students while you're here for the
Wonderful students, really kind of amazing to see. both the quality of work and the commitment to the work, and the aesthetic diversity, writing completely different kind of poems. And the only thing that unites them is that they're all very high-quality poems. So it was really an education to read the work for me.
And thanks for saying that, because I think some of the poets might be listening today over the airwaves as well as...
Close your ears.
Yeah, don't get too... Yeah. I know it's hard as a poet in the world. You need people to give you encouragement, but you also need that that hunger too, to keep growing.
Or attentiveness.
Attentiveness. Oh, that's better than hunger, right? Which implies a scarcity instead of attentiveness. That means the energy you bring.
Yeah. The main statements that come to mind for that one is from Simone Weil, a great philosopher who said, absolute and mixed attention is a prayer. Another one comes from Paul Celan, a great 20th century poet who said, attentiveness is a natural prayer of the human soul. And I don't necessarily think that they meant it so much in conventional terms, as much as how do you gather the tribes of the self to fully be present in the moment and be the person you're speaking to.
In the
or
moment.
Or be the silence you find yourself in.
Which is also so valuable, because often it's informative in so many ways. It can be something that you need, that a stillness, but it also could mean that others aren't speaking up when perhaps they could be.
Yes, and I think maybe the time for speaking up is coming to a close, and time for acting up is way past beginning. And maybe speaking is no longer enough, because those in power are no longer listening.
And when you're thinking, you know, acting up rather than speaking up, the acting, collective action is something I've been thinking a lot about in the last couple of weeks and movements. People are signing a lot of petitions and putting their names to things, which is a way of speaking up. But now it feels like there needs to be movements, I don't mean to change the things that Celan was saying, but a gathering of the tribes, a gathering of the people who are believing, like this last weekend, people gathered in the United States in different parts, all across the states, to try to start gathering to speak out against the government here. In Ukraine, people have been fighting every day now, as well as the military trying to make... I feel a little bit out of my depth here to speak about this. And I don't also want to put it on a weight on you, Ilya, to have to represent Ukraine wherever
you
walk.
No, I can't possibly represent Ukraine, but we can talk about what is happening and what has been happening since the last time we met about 5 years ago in Ann Arbor. Ukraine had been in a process of being invaded by the Russian Federation since at least 2014, when Crimea was invaded and captured. And the very bloody war in Donbass region of Ukraine. And since then, in 2022, in February, a full-scale invasion, what they call a big war, began. These cities erased, children stolen, constant bombardments of civilians. So that is happening as we speak. I have been coming back to Ukraine about twice a year. So all of that is pretty real. My family lives there still, my aunt and my uncle, and some of my relatives left, but my aunt and my uncle are in their 80s, and they refused to go, so there is that. There are, since this is a living writers, series, it might be useful to speak about writers in that part of the world right now. And you might be surprised to know how active the writer community is. People are giving poetry readings, they're holding festivals for poetry, including in Ian Odessa, where I go regularly, and you can have a poetry reading and an air raid siren will start to wail, and people will continue their poetry reading. And that doesn't just happen once or twice, it happens on a regular basis. And then they will share some cherries and grapevine, because life goes on. And here in the States, we love to talk about horror that happens elsewhere. And it does happen elsewhere. But I think it's also important to talk about survivors, people who survive horror, and how they do it, how there is will to action, will to continue the life of community, of togetherness. Through language, through books, through art. And that happens every other week in Odessa when poets gather and with their work to each other and to others. With a bunch of friends, we have started a poetry studio for kids in Odessa. You can find more information about it at the website www.poemsnotbumps.org. Again, www.poemsnotbumps.org. Let me tell you a little bit about it. So how did it start? In 2022, when the big war began, the full-scale invasion, Odessa was at that time considered a relatively safe place. And people from very unsafe, quote-unquote, places like Mariupol that got completely erased, or like Bucha, where atrocities happened, or Nikolaev that was bombed and was completely devoid of water. More refugees came to Odessa from those places. Now Odessa is not safe at all, but at that time it was. So what happens when you have a refugee? You come to a city where you don't know anybody and you try to find a place to live. You try to find a job. You try to find where food is. And the kids are usually left at the refugee center and parents are running around the city trying to find those things. And with a bunch of friends, we decided that maybe it was a good idea to give the kids some kind of activity, something they could do. But how do you start an activity when any moment a kid might have to go to a bomb shelter and sit there for hours? And how do you find an activity for a child who is alone in a bomb shelter just staring at the wall and listening to the siren going off? And so we thought, well, why not start a poetry studio? Introduce children to poems, introduce them to writing of poems. And when they go to the bomb shelter, at least they have a few poems in their memory. They're no longer alone. They have language to talk to. And that's how it started. There were many other reasons why it happened. Another one that people don't talk about is that in many ways it's a war on humanities, because people who are scientists or who are good at math or computers, they can go abroad to Vienna, to Paris, to Berlin, and they can find a job.
Their skills are welcomed.
If they work at a radio station, or if they work in a bookstore, or if they work in a museum, or if they're a teacher, it's a lot harder, because they're humanities-based people, culture-based people, and culture is so associated with the country they're in. And so people who work in humanities, they're the ones who get bombed. They're the ones who no longer have jobs, because if you work at a newspaper and all your subscribers leave, there's no more newspaper. But what do you do? What we decided to do is to invite writers to teach in that poetry studio. So we can support both the writers and the children. Another thing people don't talk about is that it's a war on the poor, literally, because those who can afford to live, live, and those who can't get bombed. Mm-hmm. So in that way, access to art, access to culture is something that is so important now, because it is given to people who may not have had that access otherwise. So that's where we are, and keep writing poems. If you want, I can maybe read a poem or two for you.
Ilya, let's take a short break, and then when
sure,
we come
absolutely.
Back, that would be wonderful. Today on Living Writers, Ilya Kaminsky is here in the studio. His book On the Table with Grey Wolf, Deaf Republic. Ilya was just talking about poemsnotbombs.org. Check it out. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We've got Jason behind the glass. We'll be back. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, so glad you did. Today on Living Writers, Ilya Kaminsky is here. Before we get back to our conversation today, I've got, as I said before the break, Deaf Republic on the table, Ilya's book of poems, National Book Award finalist, out with Grey Wolf Press. And we got to talk last time Ilya was in town about Deaf Republic. So I'll also make sure to replay that program again sometime soon so you all can hear it. It's also on the website, Living Writers website. But first, here's Ilya's bio. Ilya Kaminsky was born in the former Soviet Union and is now an American citizen. He is the author of a previous poetry collection, Dancing in Odessa, and co-editor of the ECHO Anthology of International Poetry. He has received a Whiting Award, a Lannan Literary Fellowship, and a Guggenheim Fellowship, and was named a finalist for the Neustadt International Prize for Literature. His work has been translated into more than 20 languages. And we're going to talk about poems in translation soon, too. But first, let's go back to poemsnotbombs.org and the organization for children and writers in Ukraine. So you were saying that these young writers, they're making poems.
Yeah, and you know, when I visit some time, I do have to go to a bomb shelter because, you know, you're in the war zone. And one thing I can tell you, in a bomb shelter, nobody ever reads a newspaper. Nobody reads a 1,000-page novel either. But I have seen people recite poetry to each other because they remember it. It's in their bodies, and that's people need to share things that can transmit human emotion, transmit a moment of awe that can travel from one human body to another by means of language. And that's an amazing thing to see. It's an amazing thing to see a young kid with a tiny little pencil writing something on a piece of paper in a bomb shelter. And those are not pretty places, you know. But people try to bring a human spirit, for the lack of a different word, in those spaces. And that is very amazing to see. Horrifyingly sad, and yet amazing to see. So let me read for you a couple of poems, just two, that were written by children, very young children, in a poetry studio in Odessa during the war. This one is by Tamara, a 10-year-old girl, and it's a funny little poem. She writes, I have a sore throat. The doctor will come and start bossing everyone around. Drink this and drink that. Whatever is sore in my throat is fed up with all these commands and leaves town. That is Tamara, who is 10 years old, writing in Odessa, Ukraine, during the war. And the second poem is not so happy. It's by Marina, who is 14 years old and is a war refugee. This is a poem by Marina. Good afternoon, sister. How is it in heaven? Quiet, yes. Without fear at night. We are in the basement. Told enough you, sister. Explosions again. And again, mother whispers. Thunder. Mom insists. Thunderstorm. But see, the war stares at us. I can still see the man with guns. Yes, in figure, mother's shots. And my soul zigzags to heaven. Next to God, it is calm, and no one tortures us, sister. Only your doll is awkward without you. Many dolls without children live here in this country. Many awkward dolls, cars, bears in tattered jackets, dresses, pants. We remember you. We are without you here in Ukraine.
Yeah. Thank you, Ilya. Thank
you. So this is how things are. I do want to actually thank University of Michigan for supporting Ukrainian poetry and translation at this time. recently the Slavics department have hired an important Ukrainian poet and scholar, Alek Habibuch, who is teaching in Ann Arbor now, and an important scholar and translator. Grace Mahoney is a scholar who is a graduate student at the University of Michigan. And she runs the Ukrainian poetry series for Lost Horse Press, publishing a great deal of Ukrainian poetry right now during the war.
This is, thank goodness. So this is, so University of Michigan is supporting both these scholars.
It's a very real difference that's been made. Mm. So thank you, Michigan.
Yes. And thanks for telling us too. I hope to speak to them then one day as well on Living Writers.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I'm sure they have a lot more than I to say.
Ilya, actually, I don't know about that. You always have a lot to say and a lot of good things, and also like somehow difficult things, but also joyful things. I don't know how you do it, but you do. I wonder, do you write poems with the kids when you're there, when you're in Odessa with Poems Not Bombs, and you're working with the children and the writers who are there, who are also they're you know, you're providing work and jobs for writers there, but are you writing
really
too?
I try to do my best, but Latvians, there are people who do not full time. And working with these students of war is a serious, very intense activity. So I'm not going to take full credit for that. but I'm glad to be able to help and to fundraise for this as well. Let me perhaps try to share another poem. This is by an adult poet, a poet who's in the army right now. His name is Lesik Panasiuk. I translated this together with the poet Katie Ferris, and the book will be coming out from Sarabandi Press called Letters of the Alphabet Go to War by Lesik Panasiuk. Letters of the Alphabet Go to war, clinging to one another, standing up, forming words no one wants to shut. Sentences that are blown up by the minds in the avenues. Stories shouldered by multiple rocket launches. A Ukrainian word is ambushed. Through the broken window of the letter D, other countries watch how the letter I loses its head, how the roof of the letter M falls through. The language in a time of war cannot be understood. Inside this sentence is a hole. No one wants to die, no one speaks. By the hospital bed of the letter E lies a prosthesis it is too shy to use. You can see the light through the clumsily sewn-up holes of the letter F. The soft sign had its tongue torn out due to the disagreements regarding the etymology of torture. There is too much alphabet in the hospital rooms of my country. Too much alphabet. No place to stick an apostrophe. Paint falls off the walls, showering us with words incomprehensible, like men who, in wartime, refuse to speak.
Thank you, Ilya. Thank you.
So that was Lesik Panasiuk, writing from Ukraine.
How did you find this? Because you said that Lesik is currently in the military,
correct,
in the Ukrainian military.
Correct.
How did you and Katie find this poet and to start working with them to translate?
Well, we knew him before the war started. You know, I came from Ukraine when I was 16 years old. And I see her family there, and I go there regularly. Katie had been to Odessa as well. Lisiuk is actually from Bucha, which is a terrifying place. And in the book, he writes about living Bucha under bombardments.
Bucha got occupied. Because you mentioned that many had to come to Odessa for refuge at the beginning.
Well, she came to a city named Khmelnytskyi, which is a beautiful, lovely little town in the western Ukraine, a little safer. But his grandmother died as they fled. So a lot of those, even the numbers we have for how many people were impacted by the war, the casualties take many shapes. You know, one can have a stroke on the way out of town and pass away, and it's not counted as a war casualty. But we all know what happened.
And this Lisiuk is fighting currently. It feels like everyone is then, like, you could be a poet, you could be doing other things, and now you're brought in to fighting in the war for survival.
Oh, well, there isn't much choice. If she's not going to go to the army, who will? The other thing I do want to talk about is, again, we put it in such black and white terms, and we try to always say horror, horror, horror. But I think it's important to say that people actually go to restaurants in Odessa, even between bombardments. And
the life goes on.
Yes, life has to go on. Otherwise, what are they fighting for? People get married in Odessa. There are lines of people to get notarized marriage certificate, literally on the street. And that is an amazing thing to see, that people acutely live that poetry that they're writing about. It's amazing to see in those intense moments about, for the lack of a different word, human conditions, poetry rises up and is very present in our lives, and not necessarily just on a page. The rhythm, the music, the desire to be alive, the tone, and the voice, the human voice raises it, and not necessarily raises it to scream. Sometimes raises it to address each other with clarity. And that's an amazing thing to watch.
With clarity.
Yeah.
Because so much becomes so cloudy, doesn't it, and confused.
You realize what matters and what doesn't.
Yes.
People who never said hello to each other before in a bomb shelter start sharing meals. You know, and that is real. That happens. That's an amazing thing to see. My uncle, who is 80 years old, during the war started a tenants union. An 80-year-old starts a tenants union. You know, so that is something to aspire, to grow up, to be.
Certainly so. Let's take a short break and then we'll come back. Today on Living Writers, Ilya Kaminsky is here. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time. Today on Living Writers, Ilya Kaminsky is here in the studio, Deaf Republic, out with Grey Wolf Press, the book on the table with us. And Ilya has been also talking about the organization poemsnotbombs.org that you can check out online as well. It's so good to see you again, Ilya. It's so good to see you.
Thank you for having me here.
Oh, that's, seriously, anytime. So last time you were here, we talked about your book, Deaf Republic. And now I've also been sort of, just so everyone knows, twisting Ilya's arm a little bit. Would you mind reading one of your new poems?
Sure, thank you. I will read one of the new poems and then maybe a poem from Deaf Republic for those who may not be familiar with it. Yes, so thank you again for twisting my arm. This is called I Ask That I Do Not Die. And I do realize I speak with a pretty heavy accent, so you can find this poem online if you actually want to read it. And the accent is making life complicated. The poem is called I Ask That I Do Not Die. I ask that I do not die, but if I do, I want an open coffin. I am an American poet, and therefore open for business. Owls peck the windows of the 21st century as if looking for the board members of ExxonMobil. Who? Listen, my beloved nothings, your seriousness will kill you. But before you die, my doctors have prescribed happiness. God is a warm brick or a cloud or a silence that survives empires. An old woman in the rain with a pot of mushroom soup is one of God's disguises. Her dog lifts its leg, another one of God's shenanigans, and pushes its nose into the morning's ribcage. I point my hand, God this and God that, and when God has nothing, I still have my hairy hand for a pillow. Put me in an open box, so when God reaches inside my holes, I can still see how a taxi makes a city more a city. Slippers on my feet, and only half covered by a sheet in a yellow taxi, so as not to seem laid out in state, but in transit.
Thank you, Ilya. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And so I was surprised at that ending. That was laid out in state or in transit in a taxi. That was beautiful and funny. And thank you. When you're writing, are you? Because you said you came here to the States from Ukraine when you were 16. Mm. And so, are you writing in English and in your first language, or what? How do you?
No, I'm writing in English. I'm too lazy to. Yeah, that would be too complicated. Life is complicated enough. Yeah. If you let me, I'll read just one more poem, this one from Deaf Republic.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. It's called Believe It Happily During the War.
Thank you. I love this one.
Thank you. Believe It Happily During the War. From Deaf Republic. Believe It Happily During the War. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed. Around my bed, America was falling. Invisible house. I took a chair outside and watched the sun in a 6 month of a disastrous rain in a house of money, in a street of money, in a city of money, in a country of money, our great country of money. We forgive us, live it happily during the war.
Thank you, Ilya.
Thank you, thank you.
Thanks for choosing to read that poem from Deaf Republic today. I deeply appreciate that.
Thank you for having me here and for giving me a chance to read it.
I feel like people are going to that poem now in this country more than ever.
It was a strange time to be in the country if you were born in Soviet Union. A very strange time.
Do you feel some similarities?
It would be absurd to say that it is the same, because it is not, and nobody needs more panic than what we already have. When we talk about totalitarian situation or authoritarian situation, often we see in the back of our heads the images from TV of early 20th century with soldiers marching and taking up the streets. But 100 years passed. It is hard to deny that we see very clear signs of authoritarian attitude by elected officials, especially of the executive branch. The signs are all there. The images are different, because they didn't have social media in early 20th century. They no longer need to send the soldiers marching down the streets. They can send the eyes in unidentified clothes with face masks, with cards with no identifying numbers. They can make social security numbers available to young people who never held a job. So the images change, and it would be absurd to say that they're the same. But those signs are very unsettling.
Yes. We're still here, everybody. We're still here.
Some of us are in Venezuela.
It feels like a time where, speaking of like a some of us, to find community and to make the community stronger. You spoke, Ilya, before the break about and people in the bomb shelters now in Ukraine talking to each other or inviting each other to share a meal, whereas before they wouldn't have known each other potentially in the city. And now I find myself trying to figure out ways to make connections with the community that I believe in and to build more bonds with more people.
That's a beautiful link. I'm glad you have a radio station.
This WCBN is one of the places, Ilya. Thank goodness for this little freeform radio station that keeps going in a small pocket underground here at the university through the students who come through Ann Arbor and care about this place, and they come and go and they lead it, and the community members that stay here and keep it going and believe in it. and how much it changes. Like, life is always changing too. We were sort of talking about that on the walk over, weren't we? We were saying how it's not like you'd want to go back into the past, you know, no matter how, in some ways, the future may look bleak sometimes as well. But let's talk about how we are finding community and connecting that to art, and to also how you find poems, your voice in poems, Ilya. Like, when you have a poem, when you're making a poem, whether it's yours or if it's another's, you seem to be in the poem and singing the poem. Is this what you mean when you say, when, because I'm thinking about your craft talk coming up on Friday, how to create your own tradition. Maybe I'm making this word too big, but I'm connecting tradition to community, to culture, to building a life, mm-hmm. to creating what's coming next.
Thank you for putting it all together in such a lovely way. First of all, community, I just spent a couple of days chatting with students and looking at their work. And it's amazing to see what they're able to make. We are here talking about relatively depressing things, and they see other things too. And at the same time, they're able to make art. And that is a beautiful thing to observe. And of course, they wouldn't be able to do it without their teachers. They're amazing writers who live in an ever and who teach at the university and who shape the community of younger writers here and enable them to grow and develop their own voices into the future. And that is the kind of a community one is glad to have. The university, of course, is supporting it, for which one is grateful. But it's also the belief and the language that writers have. So it's an honor to be here and to speak to the students. Regarding the craft talk, let me put it this way. In early 20th century, Odessa-born poet Anna Akhmatova had a phrase that she coined, the conversations in the air. What does it mean to have a conversation in the air? To her, that meant that writers from different time periods, from different centuries, or from different geographical locations or languages or cultures who may never have met each other because they live in different moments in time or in different moments on the places on the planet, can still talk to each other through their work, can still echo and converse and respond, and thereby defy the distance of time and space. And the conversations that I hope to have with the students will be how to create those kind of conversations across, between cultures, across cultures, through time, how to step into such a conversation, how to change such a conversation. Because for so many years we talked about it as a canon, which is kind of an ugly word. It makes you feel like it's a military word, canon, right?
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be. It can be literary, as light and gracious as a conversation in the air. I wish you over here and perhaps join. Just tune in your antenna into it. And we will talk about that, how just the other day I was reading a new anthology that is coming out of poetry from Gaza, which in 2 years, in the last 2 years, by younger poets, or not such so younger poets, but definitely living poets in Gaza. And some poems, you know, are in conversation with, say, William Carlos Williams. He has a poem about the plums and the icebox.
Right.
And you would never think that, but there you are. And it's an amazing thing to overhear and to be in the presence of that. Here we, you know, pigeonhole, if you're writing in Gaza, you're writing about horrific things that are happening. And of course, many people are, because horrific things are happening. But people also try to find however delight they can from language, and with language, when those things happen. And it is an amazing thing to observe. So some of those conversations will be that as well. And for the younger poets, it is so empowering to be able to say, I can speak to Gilgamesh,
right.
Or I can speak to Homer. That is what I have to say. Because no matter how amazing Shakespeare was, let me tell you, he never had a cell phone.
Right.
He did not know what texting is.
You could tell Shakespeare about that.
We could, but we could also observe how our speech patterns change, how our sentence construction changes, what are the new rhythms. When we speak about American English, what does it mean in terms of music of language? We can talk about image formation, how image is an international language. Let's say in an ancient poem in Latin written by Horace, you can have a young boy play on a flute to cows. And it doesn't matter if you're in Ukraine or Mexico. When that image is translated, you get it.
Yes.
A simple, eloquent, elegant image that travels through different cultures. And suddenly, Horace is alive in a very different environment from where he was writing. And how does that happen? How can the language of poetry, which is so ingrained in culture, nevertheless travel across cultures? And what it is that survives? Robert Frost said that poetry is something that dies in translation, that is lost in translation, to which a great Mexican poet, Octavia Paz, responded, well, actually, poetry is what is found in translation, what doesn't die. And, you know, both of them are right. Music disappears, but other patterns or attributes like tone can get through. Images certainly get through. So it is amazing to see and to chat about and to hear what younger people have to say, because their idea of what English is, having, you know, some of them went to high school in pandemic. They grew up learning literature in isolation. So for them, it's in some ways a very, very different practice to be alone with a book. So it was very educative, and I look forward to it.
Ilya, when you were stepping into the conversation as a young poet, did you find yourself stepping into conversation with Paul Celan?
Well, Paul Celan is one of those great heroes of the 20th century poetry. Maybe I should mention a little bit about him.
Could you put together a book as well?
Yeah, I did. A collection called A Homage to Paul Celan, together with a wonderful contemporary American poet, Jesse Waldrop. Celan was a Jewish poet writing in German language. She is actually a visionary from what's Ukraine now, from a place called Bukovina. At the time of his birth, his family spoke German. That was his mother's native language. They were Jewish, meaning that they were sent to the camps where his parents died. He was also sent to a different camp, but he survived. And in a camp, he wrote a great poem, but most people would say the greatest poem of the Holocaust period, called Das Volk, where the poem is, you can call it many things. You can call it a Kaddish, you can call it a fugue, you can call it a ballad even. It has certain rhythms. But what is fascinating to me is it is mostly made from scraps of references or scraps of other people's lands. He wove together a giant blanket from words of his friends, of his contemporaries, of poets like Heine, and the great 19th century German language Jewish poet, of Goethe, who is arguably the greatest German language poet of all time, but also of Song of Songs, the greatest, perhaps, ancient Hebrew poem. And he wove it together into a repeating pattern that is very beautiful and very unusual sounding in German language. And Celan is known as the poet who continued writing in German despite the fact that German speakers killed his family. And he is, for many people, a sign that the culture can survive despite the odds, that he was able to write in the camps a great poem of the Holocaust. Adorno, an important 20th century philosopher, says that it's immoral to write poetry after Holocaust. And that's a very moving and impactful statement. However, after he read Paul Celan's poetry, Adorno said, well, perhaps I was mistaken to say that it is immoral to write poetry after Holocaust. So there is hope.
There is hope. And that connects, Ilya, to what you said about, let's think of the survivors. They're surviving through like what's happening now.
Yeah, and it also connects to what you said about community, because community is what helps us to survive. And without community, there is no action.
Thank you, Ilya. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Today on Living Writers, Ilya Kaminsky. The book on the table with us, Deaf Republic. Ilya is in town with the Zell Visiting Writers series this week. You can see Ilya tomorrow at UMA at 5:30 for a reading from Deaf Republic and a Q&A, and then on Friday at the Robert Hayden Room at 10 a.m. You can see both of these online too. So check out the Zell Visiting Writers series and poemsnotbombs.org. Thanks everybody out there for listening. Thanks Mom for listening too. Thanks to Jason for engineering today. Many, many thanks to Ilya. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.
Ilya. Thank you.
There we go. You listen to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. It is 6 o'clock, which means it is time for your daily sports report. I'm going to be your host tonight, Evan Anderson, and I'm going to be joined by an excellent panel. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty good. So, today's topic, I think we're just going to be talking... You guys good in there?
Yeah.
We're going to be talking a little bit of MLB baseball and a little bit of Michigan baseball. This kind of been the topic that I've been doing the past couple weeks, so just kind of going through, giving the update again. Michigan baseball had an interesting weekend. I don't know if you guys caught any of that. Last week their midweek game was against Eastern Michigan, and they were able to kind of get a little bit of revenge against Eastern Michigan. They had lost to them earlier in the season in a Tuesday afternoon game. This time they were able to kind of best them. They won 13-2, run ruled them. So that was kind of we talked about on past shows about how these midweek games are the games that Michigan really needs to win, just for like both morale and sharpen their tools. They have some pretty tough in-conference series over the weekend, so these are definitely games that you want to win.
Yeah, I called the game where they lost to Eastern Michigan 2 weeks ago from Tuesday, and the problem with them was their bats weren't consistently hot. I feel like the top of the order with Mitch Foyt, you have Casillas. Their top of the order has been consistent all year, but it's really been rounding with the bottom of the order. And now with these midweek games, it's the opportunity to stack games. I feel like looking in their upcoming schedule view, I think with the game against Oakland tonight, they beat Toledo or beat Akron yesterday. There's a chance for them to stack up wins and maybe get on a 5-6-game winning streak heading into the end of conference play. And building momentum for this team, I feel like, is a very big key for them to get momentum and to potentially